Hey, Northview, as we continue in our summer spectacular of speakers, I can't tell you how excited I am to have Brian Tome with us. Brian leads Crossroads Church in Cincinnati. Crossroads is a multi-site church that's grown to well over 12,000 people in three different locations. But what some of you may not know is that we partner with Crossroads in a couple of different ways. For instance, Crossroads are the ones who pioneered the spiritual growth campaigns that we participate in each and every year. We're also working directly with them to provide aftercare homes for the girls rescued out of sexual trafficking in India. So needless to say, I have a great respect for Crossroads and all that they're doing there. I love it that you guys get to meet and hear Brian speak. So please, would you give Brian a big Northview welcome?
Well, it's fantastic to be with you here today at Northview and Carmel, Fishers, the greater Lafayette area. But there was just applause. I don't think I've ever had applause at the own church I pastor, so I need to come here to get some more moral esteem boosting. Thank you very much for making me feel good. Feels good for me. I hope it feels good for you. Well, you know, today we're going to be talking about something that God's been working in me, and he's been actually working in our church. And actually, I did a message somewhat similar to this a while ago, and I was actually shocked at the response from people at Crossroads. And what we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk about manhood. And it's going to be a little unusual because, ladies, I'm excited you're here. In fact, you're going to find that you're going to get way, way more out of this than you think that you are. Honestly, I found this out. But I just want to let you know right now, I'm going to speak today to the guys. I'm going to say, so guys, if it was just you and I around a campfire or on my back deck, I'm going to talk to you around my back deck the way I'm going to talk to you right now. And ladies, you're welcome to listen in. I think you're going to learn things. I think it's going to be good. I just have to say this. If you are here with a boyfriend or with your husband, one rule of engagement is there should be none of this. Honestly, I'm going to say some things that could be a bit challenging. And if you want your man to shut down, give him an elbow. Any good that could come out of this will stop if he feels any pressure from you at all. In fact, when you leave here today, you know, don't be thinking you're going to talk to him. So, honey, what'd you think about that? Hint, hint, did you hear what I hope you heard? No, no, you don't even want to bring it up. Allow him to process with you if he wants to process with you. What is a man? What is a man? We're going to look at what a man is, at least one example in the Bible from Noah. And the marks that we see in Noah's life are what a man is. And they're not the marks that we see put out there as sort of stereotypical masculinity. I don't know if you've heard of Nick Offerman, sort of humorous guy, knows a bit about manhood, at least his brand of manhood. And this is sort of the way we view manhood discussions today. Check this out.
We'll be right back.
So there we have stereotypical images of what a man is. That's not at all what we're interested in today, but unfortunately, that's sort of where the conversation stays in our culture. In fact, there's a resurgence in manhood talk, and part of this is that psychologists and sociologists will tell us that girls do naturally become women, but boys do not naturally become men. There's something different about the wiring of the male brain, something different about the societal milieu that we find ourselves in, that young males keep trying to prove themselves as a man. We don't know what a man is. So you have a man that will go out and, or a boy that will go out and drink till he pukes over and over and over again. That was me in high school trying to prove that he's a man. Or go out and do random acts of violence. Again, that was me in high school trying to prove I was a man, or in college or after that, bagging any woman you can to prove from your sexual virility that you're a man. And all these are efforts of a boy to somehow prove that he's a man. And we see this happen in much more tame ways today. Today we see the reemergence of facial hair. Yes, I have facial hair. It's the first time in my life right now I've ever had facial hair. Yes, I have hyper baby face. I've been off just like Steve from Crossroads for several weeks, and so I said, let's just be lazy. So I was growing my beard out, and then my kids told me, Dad, your beard makes you look older. So I said, okay, I'll shave off the sides, make me look a little bit younger, because it's all gray. Why the emergence in beards? It's because it's some sort of masculinity we're looking for. Why the emergence of straight razors to shave ourselves? We feel like it's manly. We want to do that. And these are not, it's okay to have a beard. It's okay to have a straight razor. It's okay to do stereotypical manly things. But these are not the marks of manhood that we see in the scriptures. They're not the marks of manhood that make a great man. They're not the marks of manhood that make a great culture when you have a band of warrior men that go to a beat of a different drummer. They're not the marks of manhood that actually satisfy a woman and can raise a culture. And we're going to talk about that today. Let's pray before I go any further. God, thank you for today, for Northview Church, for Steve, our friendship, and for anything that you've given me or enabled me to see on this topic. I pray that you would bring it out to us right now, and you'd strengthen and build every man in our presence. I pray these things in your name, Jesus. Amen. Five marks of manhood. Five marks of them. In the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 16, we see a veiled way that these marks are referenced. I really started grappling with this material when I realized that my son, as a youngster, I didn't want him to go through the same machinations of trying to prove his manhood or his virility that I did. And I learned that in all ancient cultures, and many cultures still today, there's always a mark of manhood. There is a ceremony that you go through that marks you as a man. And so young males don't have to prove their masculinity. They have the elder males tell them, you are a man. And it doesn't matter what it is. It could be going to a top of a mountain and getting a bald eagle feather. It could be killing a deer, the first deer you've had, and drinking its blood. Actually, in some ancient cultures, it's having a one-time homosexual act with the chief of the tribe. That'd be a bummer. I don't recommend that one. I really don't recommend that one. But the important thing is there's something that cements that this boy is no longer a boy. He is now a man. So I started to figure out, what is it that I would tell my son, Jake, you are a man, you don't have to prove it any longer. And as I looked at all the people I know, because I tell you what, your age says nothing about whether or not you're a man. Nothing. I know 15-year-old men and I know 38-year-old boys. Your age tells you nothing. Doesn't matter if you can vote, doesn't matter if you can drink, doesn't matter if you've been in the military, it doesn't matter. You can be a boy at 49, you can be a man at 14. And all the people I saw who were men that I valued and looked up to, and the men in the scriptures, when they're at their best, have these five marks. And they're somewhat alluded to in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 13. It says this, be watchful, stand firm. I don't know if they have scriptures on sides, but they do, good. Be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men. Be strong. Let all that you do be done in love. It's an interesting thing there. Act like men. Act like men. Today, we would like to scrub out any sort of gender reference and just say, well, act like adults. Act like enlightened human beings. But in the Bible, it's an aspirational thing to act like a man. And in this verse, there's five veiled ways that you see the five marks of manhood. First, it says, be watchful. Be watchful. A man has vision. He has vision. It talks about standing firm. Why would you stand firm? You would stand firm because everyone's going against you because men take a minority position. It tells us also to act like men. So there's a plural. Act not just act like a man, but act like men. So there's a plural, which means that men operate in team. It also says, let all that you do, what is it that you do? You work. Men work. It's a value that we have. And also done in love. What's the thing that you do in love? You protect. Men are protectors. One of the movies that came out several months ago that was somewhat controversial. I'm always feeling a little uncomfortable when I speak at another church because I don't know your culture. I don't know what your pastor said before I've gotten here. I don't know if I'm stepping in a landmine. So if I step into some landmine, just say, oh, he doesn't know any better. We'll just give him some grace. So churches have really come out and were really like down negative on the movie Noah that came out several months ago. It's a fascinating movie. It starred Russell Crowe. I'm not sure I'll recommend the movie. I'll just say it was very helpful for me to see this movie. If you happen to see this movie when it comes out in DVD, a few things to know. Number one, 50% of the movie is pure conjecture. We don't know. It's not in the book of Genesis. Could have happened, could not have happened. It's just conjecture. 25% of the movie is absolutely dead on what's in the scriptures. Then 25% of the movie is absolutely not in the Bible. It's absolutely against what's in the Bible. It just puts things in there that are actually not there. So I'm not trying to prop up how great the movie was from a biblical standpoint. But what I do see that's really interesting is a picture, a character of Noah that I think is way more in tune with the Bible's understanding of Noah than the children's Bible understanding of Noah. I mean, I don't know if you've seen any pictures of Noah in the children's Bible, if you've seen any pictures of Noah in churches or in church coloring things, but you know, the Noah that I see is not the Russell Crowe of Noah. I mean, Russell Crowe was sort of this gritty man kind of guy. The Noah that I've always seen has been this guy who's sort of old and all he does is sit around petting cats all day. That's just what he does. And I really found it refreshing to see a man playing Noah. He had the pics of a man. We have a Christ. Maybe the reason that we see Noah is this old frail guy that sits around petting kitty cats is because our churches, guys, are so feminized that we have to have a picture of a man that's very gentle and tame. Or maybe the reason why we have very few men inside of churches. Statistically, the percentage of women is going up, up, up in churches, and the percentage of men is going down, down, down. It's because we're using our art and depicting things that are not in line with how men think. I mean, it's an old line that if a man-eating lion came into the average church, he would starve to death. Let that one sit with you for a little while. See, man-eating lion, he kind of goes hungry. Nonetheless, we have a crisis in talking to men in our churches and giving the biblical understanding of what a man looks like. In the book of Genesis, chapter 6, verse 5 to 8, it says this. Now the Lord saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord regretted that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, I will blot out man whom I have created from the face of the land, man and animals and creeping things and birds of the heavens, for I am sorry that I've made them. But Noah found favor in the eyes of God. Now, why is it that Noah finds favor in the eyes of God? Don't really know. It's conjecture to know about the marks of Noah, to know why God said, man, you're a guy who I have found favor in. But we see how Noah behaves over the next several chapters in the book of Genesis, and we see the five marks I just alluded to in 1 Corinthians, and they're the five marks that I always see in every man. All five of these are in every man. Number one, a man has a vision for his life. A boy lives one day at a time. Boys don't think long term. Boys don't want to study because boys don't understand what happens if you get a good education. Boys don't want to do anything that's difficult. Boys just want the same old easy thing day in, day out. And men have a long-term vision, have an awareness and understanding of why we're here and what we're doing. And we live with vision, and we're okay to do things today that we don't want to do today because I have a vision for something that I want to have done later on. And a boy will never be able to do that. He just won't. Genesis 9, verse 1. And God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. This is a vision that Noah gets. That's a good vision right there if you're a guy. Be fruitful with your wife, multiply. It's a long-term vision that he has. Guys, do you know what it is that your life is to be about? Is there anything that you're working forward, working toward, planning about? This isn't the normal stuff like retirement or just get a degree. Yes, degrees are good. But what's on the other side? Is there anything that's guiding your actions today? I was watching a documentary recently of an injured vet. And I don't know if he knew it or not, but he was quoting Mark Twain, but he was applying it to himself when he was talking about how he was coming over suicidal thoughts and dealing with the limbs that he's lost and how he's recovering. He said this. He said, the two best days in a man's life are the day he's born and the day he finds out why. Man, if we don't know what it is that we're doing on this planet, what is the mark, what is the God's doing in us, we're going to live a frustrated, boyish life who just lives day to day without any awareness of what we're supposed to do. And what we see is the entertainment industry has created all kinds of handles to simulate what vision would look like. It's been called masturbatory masculinity. Meaning there's things that sort of give us quick-off joys or thrills that mimic the real thing but aren't the real thing. For instance, most of us are not ever going to go to war, thankfully. But sports are our war. It's our form of war. We get all fired up in the locker room talking about killing this and that because it's a form of war. It's a fake of war. Very few of us can remember the last time we put blisters on our hands. Very few of us can remember actually being sore because you're bent down and actually working. And so the air-conditioned gym is our form of labor. Very few of us understand what heroism is outside of a video game. Why are video games continually escalating and more men are more into video games then they're into other forms of entertainment because it's a masturbatory way to feel like a hero. Social media takes off. Why does it take off? It gives us a sense of connection and a sense of team. You start to see other forms of entertainment that men go after, women as well. One of them, fascinating one, is the warrior run or the tough mudder. And the chief marketer for Tough Mudder or the Warrior Run actually says this about why those events are so popular. If you know them, it's running long distances in team, under wires that are electrocuting you, through ice baths, through mud. And he says this. He says, we don't really know if we're tough anymore. We don't have fist fights. We don't chop wood. Life has become convenient and easy. In a Tough Mudder, we get a lot of what we call the fight club male, the 25 to 40-year-old guy in a white-collar job who hasn't been scared, hasn't been, thank you, wet and muddy, and wants to test himself to see what he's made of, to prove that even though he's 38 and has a roller bag and a door on his minivan that closes by itself, he still has this inner badass. It's this visceral sense of accomplishment that handing in the Q2 report doesn't give you. I hope I didn't get in trouble there with that little word. They edited out the video I wanted to show earlier, so I assume that word's okay or they missed it. Nonetheless, again, we would use these words, but again, guys, remember, you're over my house, you're over my house, this is the way that we would talk. And this is just an idea of how we're longing to be a part of something and be fully engaged in our senses. If there's one through line through all of these five marks, it's that boys are passive and men are aggressive. That's the through line. Boys allow life to happen to them. Boys are victims. Boys are hoping somebody else will do it. Men say, no, this is my life. This is my mission. This is my vision. This is my responsibility. I'm going to step up and do it. Number two, a man works and a boy plays. A man works and a boy plays. Boys live to play. I know I did when I was a boy. I live to play. I live for recess. I live to get outside of school. I live for summer vacations. I didn't want to help around the house at all. I just didn't want to do that. And men embrace work. And we see this in our society, how boyish we are. You know that there's a male who's a boy, no matter how old he is, when he's drawn to the work habits of Europe. When men start thinking, maybe we should actually mandate you can only work 20, 30 hours a week. I understand it's working over in Europe really well. You start to get a sense of a boy that doesn't like to work. You know there could be something boyish if you're drawn to titles of books like The 4-Hour Work Week. Ooh, I'd like to only work 4 hours. I'm not saying there isn't wisdom in that book, but boys are always drawn to something where I don't have to work. Men value the idea of work. Book of Genesis chapter 6, verse 14 to 15, it says, make yourself an ark of gopher wood. Make rooms in the ark and cover it inside and out with pitch. This is how you are to make it. Think about the job, the work, the vision that Noah, next time I'm going to be calling him Charlton Heston next. You think about the work ethic that Noah had to have to build this ark. One of the things that's in the movie that I don't like at all, it's one of the, part of the 25% that's totally against the Bible, is there are these large creatures, stone creatures, that are helping Noah build this ark. That's nowhere in the Bible. It's not true. Noah did it the old-fashioned way. He worked at it. And guess what? He didn't have a steel power saw. He didn't have a bunch of Mexicans he can pull in. He and his sons, who have an amazing manly work ethic, by the way. I say we have a whole group of people that understand to work, and yet boys make jokes about Mexicans because they don't understand that sort of work. It's amazing to me. Noah has this need to build a massive wooden structure, and he has no power, no gasoline. It's just he and his sons' own muscles. I believe God had favor on Noah because Noah had a work ethic. One of the more interesting books on men's studies you can do is called Manthropology. Now, let me be very clear. I mentioned this book at Crossroads once, and people thought they heard Manthology. Don't get the book Manthology. Go ahead and get it if you want. It's a much different book than Manthropology. If you want to understand about man-on-man interaction, get Manthology. But I'm talking Manthropology. Manthropology. In the book Manthropology, we find out the abilities that men have had that we have in our capacities that we don't exhibit. Nero's legions marched nearly 2 marathons a day, 6 days straight. Each of them carried 100-pound backpacks. That's on page 99 of Manthropology. Our capacities are way beyond what we encounter them as today. As they interact with people of the Australian British Social Special Forces, they say the mandates for men today are the same as they've always been, and men are still able to hit those physical marks, but one example is different. We get shin splints today. Why do we get shin splints today? And the theory is because now we've all grown up with nice, soft, cushy Nike Air shoes, and our bones don't get as hard as God has enabled them to get made, like when I was a younger kid, when I had Buster Brown shoes. I always have Buster Brown shoes. Old enough to have Buster Brown shoes and tough skins from Sears. That's right. Wear those tough skins from Sears. My kneecaps would wear out before my tough skins wore out. And they'd keep hiking up my, I'd grow, they'd get higher and higher and higher. And people would say, hey, where's the flood? We have to reclaim the value for work. Jesus says in the book of Matthew chapter 5:17, he says, my Father is always working. My Father is always working, and I too am working up to this very time. A man works and a boy plays. Number 3, a man is a protector and a boy is a predator. A man's a protector and a boy is a predator. In Galatians chapter 6:18, we see that God says, I will establish my covenant with you, and you will come into the ark, you, your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you. Noah's work, his vision, is protecting his family. There's a role of protector that he has. We see this very clearly with sexual appetites and the things, guys, that we force or want to talk women into. Whenever you have a guy who's in a relationship with a woman and he keeps trying to have her do more and more for him sexually without understanding of what her future is going to be, you have a predator. As soon as you're thinking about your current satisfaction and you're not thinking about her future relationships, you're not protecting her, even if she says she's okay with it, even if she says, I'm okay with this, if you're not thinking about whether or not this is going to be helpful for her future, you're preying on her through the relationship versus protecting. Now, as I give this next story, as I talked about this, people don't believe it actually happened. It did actually happen. And as I also talk about this, I've had a lot of people going, oh man, I wish I would have done that. I wish it. As I talk about things here today, understand, I've done a lot of things wrong, and I would replay a lot of things in my life. And my hope is not to make any of us who are older as men say, oh, I wish I would have done that one. But as I talked about this one, as I thought about it, I found this one is somewhat rare. And it has to do with my girls in their first dates with any new boyfriend that they have. It's amazing to me that we allow our daughters, our precious assets of our daughters, to go out with common strangers. I mean, can you imagine some 16-year-old kid coming to your house and say, hey, Mr. Smith, I'm just going to take your skis skiing. You'd be like, oh, no, you're not. You're not taking my freaking skis. No, you're not. Or imagine they came over and said, hey, I hope you don't mind, but I'm just going to borrow your car and go for a spin. You go, you're not taking my car. Imagine they came over and said, hey, I just decided, you've never met me before, I just have to wear your best suit I have. I'm like, what? But someone comes over and says, hey, I'm going to take your daughter. Oh, you are? Okay, have her back in time. What's more valuable, skis, cars, suits? Yeah, we would never allow our daughter to just go with somebody. It's really, really weird in our culture. Really, really odd. So I have a thing where whenever a new boy comes in into my family to date, they have to see me first. And if you have young daughters, you have to set the expectation that it has to happen early. You got to tell them about this when they're young. You can't just spring it on them when they're 16. Oh, by the way, you can't go on any dates until I meet the guy. You have to do it early. So I'll say to my daughters, hey, you can't go out on anybody. I'm not going to put you in a car with some strange guy. You're not able to go out until I say you are, and I'm going to talk with the guy and all this kind of stuff. So my youngest daughter, she's 16. Well, she was 15 several months ago when this all happened. She's got this boyfriend. I like him. He seems like a good guy. But he's not, at this point, had not taken her out on a solo date yet. Why? Because we hadn't talked yet. So I got his text number. I was texting him, hey, Ben, I'd like to talk with you and make sure this is okay. And I was okay, let's get together. Yeah, Sean, fine, we'll get together. And this wasn't working. One day I come home, and my daughter Mariah says, Ben's coming over. Dad's going to take me to a movie. I went, no, he's not. He's not taking you to a movie. He goes, yeah, he's going to take me to a movie. And her mom has approved this, so now it's kind of two women against me. Yes, he can. He's coming over. He's already halfway down. He lives a half hour away. Now he's 15 minutes away. And I said, hey, well, you're not going to go out with him. Again, I'm going to talk a little bit about my minority position. You got to take a minority position. You're not going to go out with him. I'm in the minority. But I got a great idea. Ben and I have been wanting to get together. So when he comes down, he and I will just go out. And she goes, Dad, no, please, Dad. Honey, we've talked about this for a long time. It's going to happen. If you ever want to go out with Ben one-on-one, it's going to happen. He's coming down right now. It's going to happen right now. He says, oh, please, okay. So Ben comes in. I said, hey, Ben, sorry, Mariah didn't have my permission to go out with you tonight, but we've been talking about getting together. So why don't you and I right now, let's go out, you and I, have our little conversation. He says, okay. So I go out. He's in his dad's minivan. And I said, why don't you drive? Now, why do I say that? Because I want to see how he drives. So why don't you drive? So we go over to Frisch's. They have Frisch's here in Indianapolis. Frisch's, big boys. There's a Frisch's close to where I live, so let's go over there. So we go in, sit down, and I ordered, coffee. You want anything? He said, no, sir, I'm fine. You sure? You know, not even like a milkshake. His stomach is doing somersaults right now. He's, you know. I said, well, Ben, no offense, but Mariah means way more to me than she does to you. And in all likelihood, she's not going to be with you very long. So I just want to have a conversation about this. If she's with you for a long time, great, but I just want to have this conversation with you because I have a need to protect her. So a couple things. First is I need your assurance that you're going to protect her reputation. That whenever she's not around you or whenever you break up or whenever you're separate, you're only and always going to talk pause over her. Are you going to do that? He said, yes. Yes, we'll do that. Okay. Secondly, I need to know right now what you're planning to do sexually with my daughter. Well, how far are you looking to go? He told me, and I said, okay, I approve of that. And what are you going to do to make sure it doesn't go past that? Because if something happens, I mean, this is important to me. Tells me, and it was third base I was okay with. And I just tell him, kidding. I don't even know. It was hold hands and kiss. I decided not to ask, is it like a normal kiss or an alfalfa kiss? I decided not to ask that. You know alfalfa kiss? Alfalfa. I decided not to go into that level of detail, but I said, hold hands. I said, that's fine. We talked about it. And I said, okay, Ben, I appreciate it. So we went back home, and that was it. And I'll tell you what, I actually think my 16-year-old daughter is dating a 16-year-old man. Very, very impressive. Why would I do that? And interestingly enough, when I've told that story, and I anticipate it's going to happen again, I don't know another woman, whether she's 16 or 66, that hasn't said, I wish my dad would have done that for me. I ignored that the women were not in here, but now I'll address you. Ladies, how many of you wish your dad would have done that for you with every first date? Because all of us want to be protected. And men, no one is going to be able to do for people who are in your sphere of influence what only you can do. And boys will never get it. Boys will always want to be part of the pack. But men, we protect. We think about women's future. We think about kids' future. We think about the week's future. We don't think about what's easiest for us. We protect. Number four, men take a minority position and boys need to be in the majority. Men take a minority position and boys need to be in the majority. What happens when you try to get boys to go to like a youth retreat? What happens? What's the first thing they say? Well, who's going? Who's going? They want to know, like, who's going? What's happening? If we look in our culture right now about what's happening sexually, what our sexual beliefs are, we're forming our sexual beliefs and having sexual practices based purely on what does Hollywood believe is right. I don't want to have some belief of something that is really odd and really out there. Boys always need to be in the majority. They need the comfort of the masses, whatever it is. And men are able to say, I'm going to say something that other people don't believe. I'm going a place because I have a vision, and I'm going a place where I don't expect people to be. Because why is there visions? There's visions because someone's not there. There's visions because no one's doing it. And whenever that's the case, you will find yourself in a minority. You'll be in the minority morally. You'll be in the minority spiritually. You'll be in the minority emotionally. You'll be in the minority in terms of how you manage your body. Men take a minority position. Genesis 7, verse 1, then the Lord said to Noah, go into the ark, you and your household, for I've seen that you are righteous before me in this generation. What's he saying? You're in the minority, Noah. Everybody else, you're in the minority, and you're the one that I'm doing something in because you're unusual. As soon as you find yourself, the closer you get to God, the more you need to be okay with being in the minority. And if being in the minority isn't okay with you, we just have to admit we've got more boyishness in us than we understand. One author says this, masculinity is not something given to you, but something you gain. And you gain it by winning small battles with honor. That was Norman Mailer. You gain it by winning small battles, like being the one guy that says, I don't think that's okay. Being the one person that actually stands up and says, I can't do this any longer. I don't believe that all gods are the same. I'm going to manage my money differently. I'm not going to spend a zero like everybody else does. I'm actually going to prioritize giving. Why? Because as a man, you're a giver because giving is a way that you protect. Boys will never understand giving because money is only about how you play and how you fund your lifestyle. Whereas when you're a man, you see giving as a way to protect. And when you're like that, you will always be in the minority. Number five. A man works for the team, and a boy plays for the MVP. What happens when a boy doesn't get the way that he wants? A boy always takes his ball and he goes home. What happens when we divide up teams? A boy always wants to be the quarterback. A boy always wants to be in the center of things. But a man understands the value of team, and he operates in the context of team. Jesus is obviously the ultimate man. He's the ultimate God-man. And what do we see in the Trinity? It says in the Bible that we are made in the image of God. Men are made in the image of God. Men and women are made in the image of God. Men are made in the image of God. So what do we know about God? We know that God operates in team. God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. God can't do it on his own, and yet God asks us to be like him and be in team because he operates in team. And yet in our society, everything that we see that's happening in our society is trying to isolate us and get us to be on our own. Video games, I'm not anti-video game at all. I am just anti how it's making us more isolated. A boy, by the time he's 21, has played 10,000 hours of video games. And that has been, for the most part, in isolation by himself. Maybe linked in with somebody from Minneapolis who he's never met and had a conversation with, but it's in isolation. The average male under 18 watches 50 pornographic movies a week. 50 porn clips a week. The average male under, oh, not my son. Tell you what, the majority and the waterfall of what's happening in our society to isolate young males, have them view sex as a solo sport, is a deafening waterfall that's deafening our hearts. And this is part of why sex lives for so many people in marriage is unsatisfying, because sex has been a solo sport. When you've had 50 personalized experiences every single week for how many years, it's all about you and gratifying you. And then you come into a relationship and you got to think about gratifying somebody else. Those are hard things to erase, hard things to go around. You can be a boy and, as I said, be 48, have the physique of Arnold Schwarzenegger or young Arnold Schwarzenegger before Botox. You could, it doesn't matter how much money you make. It doesn't matter how successful you are, how many degrees there are. These five things are outside of racial boundaries. They're outside of socioeconomic boundaries. They're outside of any boundaries. These are things, guys, that are the cry of our hearts. We aspire to these things and become men, or we stay like everybody else and be boys. And in this movie, Noah, you had Noah, who was the epitome of a man, and you had his nemesis in the movie, Tubal Cain. And Tubal Cain looks like a man, but he actually is a boy. And one of the defining quotes of the movie is when Tubal Cain says this: "We are abandoned orphan children, cursed, damned to live by the sweat of our brow, damned if I don't take what I want." It's a boy right there. It's a boy. I'm by myself, I'm on my own, and I'll take whatever I need to take. That's what a boy says. Contrast that with Noah. Noah in the movie, who's interacting with his son, and he says to his son, "I'm asking you to be a man and to do what needs to be done." What needs to be done? What needs to be done is having a vision. That's what needs to be done. What needs to be done is valuing work, valuing sweat equity, valuing work. What needs to be done is actually building up our teammates, our friends, our families, if we have one. What needs to be done is taking up the minority position. What needs to be done is protecting the isolated, the weak. These are the things that needs to be done. In Genesis 7:5, it says, "And Noah did all that the Lord had commanded him." Why? Because he's a man. He manned up, and that's what it is. It's not about riding motorcycles or using tobacco or using some language. Those are all like external characters. It's about, God, what is it that you want me to do? And these are the five things that God wants you to do. Last verse for us. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 11. It says, "When I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. But when I became a man, I gave up childish ways." We become a man. In other words, when I was a boy, I spoke like a boy, I thought like a boy, I reasoned like a boy, but when I became a man, I gave up childish ways. Men, none of us are perfect in all five of these areas. None of us are. All of us can read these things and find something that we go, That's an Achilles heel of mine. That's something I'm not coming full measure to. But I encourage you to look at these five things and to start picking these off and identifying what it is, where's your weak area, and to go after that. Why? Because God wants you to become a man. And the church has too long just tried to make you nice, try to make you moral, try to make you churchy, try to make you Bible literate. Fine, become all those things. But the aspiration here is to become a man in the line of Jesus, in the line of Noah. When that happens, our churches start operating more healthily. Our families start being places of refuge and fun. And actually, our culture actually starts to change. As long as the majority of boys have their way and there isn't a man who will step up and take the minority and find other bands of brothers and go after a vision and work it hard and protect, we'll keep where we are. God's called you to something beyond where you are right now. He's created you to be a man, a unique man, the man that only you can be because he has a unique vision for you, but he's created you to be a man. So in that vein, that's why this is called Man Up. Let me pray. God, thank you for creating men and women, the unique distinctives that they are. I don't even know what those distinctives are, God. I don't understand all that's different about men and women, but I do understand what you've designed to be have different between boys and men. And I pray that today, in the greater Lafayette area, Fishers, Carmel, that we've had boys that are growing into men, and that we have men in here who actually take other men under their shoulder or by their side and band together as a band of brothers to be the people and the team you've designed us to be. And I thank you for these things in your name, Jesus. Oh, God, you know, I just think about right now. I think about my teammate, Steve. Thank you for him and a blessing that he is to me and to the kingdom. And I pray that you continue to build into him this final mile before he comes back to serve this great church. And I pray these things in your name, Jesus. Amen.